you're enjoying the Fastest Known podcast, please let us know by rating and reviewing it in iTunes. If you have a guest suggestion, please send that person to me, Craig, at craig@fastestknowntime.com. And if you have feedback on how we can improve the show or anything to change, please send that to me as well. And finally, each Monday morning, we send out a newsletter with the best FKTs of the week. It's a cool way to keep up with what's going on and learn more about the culture of the sport. Sign up for it at fastestknowntime.com/newsletter.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everyone, to the Fastest Known Podcast, talking with some of the fastest known people. And today, wow, we are actually talking with the fastest person I know in the mountain trail world. I'm going to make you try to guess this because this is sort of interesting. This person is a runner's runner. Every person who races knows this guy because he's always in front of them. And the list is just absurd. He has won 16, unless I've miscounted, national titles. No one else has ever done that. He holds 13 fastest known times, and he just finished first again in the U.S. Mountain Running Championships. I hope you know who I'm speaking about. Welcome, Joe Gray.
Hey, what's going down, Buzz? They might not know because you got the number wrong. It's 20.
I see. I know.
Yeah,
I
mean, 20 national titles.
If you blink your eye, it's going to be 21 before you can tell. So you, of course, just won the Mountain Running Championship. Did you win the Half Marathon Trail Championships in Wisconsin in September?
Yep.
See, 20 national titles. This is absurd. And international titles. How many times have you been the world mountain running champion?
For mountain running, twice. And then for Xterra Trail Championship, five. And then one snowshoe world title.
So in our written show notes, we list sports highlights. I've already started to do this. And I said, we can't do it. It's like 6 pages long. And so I'm mainly linking to some other locations because we cannot list your sports highlights, Joe. Yeah. So but we're going to get into this because here's something that I've observed, and you tell me your perspective here. You mostly don't do ultras. You're just the fastest guy around, like I said at the start of the podcast. You've won almost everything. You tend to still win almost everything. And yet it is possible that some people do not know your name because you don't do ultras. Somehow in the United States, ultra became this thing, and people got a lot of notoriety for it, but you just win national and international titles. Some people might not have heard of you. Do you think that's the case? What's your perspective?
Me not running ultras that often. I mean, I do run them and I have run them, and I think it really boils down to the lack of diversity in our sport, really, to be honest with you. Being a black athlete amongst predominantly white sport, you don't get as much media attention and things like that. And whether it's long or short, you look at white athletes, a lot of my peers that I came into the sport with that were doing the classic distances, they got a lot of more attention than I did in those early years of my career, even when I was winning. And so a lot of it is just the fact that media was very focused on what it's always been focused on, right? The white athletes were the ones being advertised, getting sponsorships, being on the covers of our outdoor world, in their magazines and things like that. And so I was a black sheep, quite literally. But I think that's part of it. Also, I'm not someone who focuses a ton on a lot of different social platforms. It's not somewhere, an aspect of my life where I spend a lot of time or put a whole bunch of, just put a whole bunch of my time and into that and energy. I'm more so coming from that world where, competing is the, at the forefront. And that's the best way to inspire the next generation that I'm trying to inspire.
Wow. Good answer, Joe. You provided two very thoughtful answers. Let's go with the first one. This is very notable because if one is watching, an international road marathon or Olympics, anything like that, anything on the road and also long distance on the track, there is a very, very high percentage of people of African descent. I mean, it's sort of unmistakable. I can't remember what it is right now, but I think as a couple of years ago, of the 15 fastest marathons ever run, you know, 13 were by Kenyans or Ethiopian heritage. So mm-hmm. it's just startling. While in trail, not so much. So do you feel that, I mean, I just kind of, again, I don't have any statistic, but just looking around, there's not a lot of Black folks out running trail races. So do you feel, so how does that feel to you?
You know, earlier in my career, you know, it felt weird, right? You look around, no one looks like you. And obviously you wonder in your mind, do people really support you? Are they happy that you're there? These are just things you wonder because, you know, you're the odd one out in essence. And so, yeah, I mean, in those early years, you just didn't feel support. And even still today, right, there's times where, you know, I've had races where I've heard people say racist things to me at the end of a race or shout racist things in the midst of me racing. But as I've gotten older, I realize, right, the bigger picture is I'm not there for those people. They have an agenda and, you know, it's of no concern to me at this point in my career. I have to do what I have to do. And that is being successful in my career and going forward with the goals and the pursuits that I have, the things that I dream about, because it's not just about me. I'm trying to inspire, like I said, that next generation. So, you know, if I act out every time somebody says something crazy to me and I'm not focused on my race or I mess up my race because I'm focused on their agenda, then, you know, I'm not going to be able to inspire the next generation and I'm going to look like a jackass. So, you know, I got to focus on me. But on the other part that you said, I think in the really competitive classic mountain races, both in Europe, just in globally and even on the world stage, it mostly African descent, like I'm African descent as well. Our family comes from Africa as well. But if you look at the world championships for mountain running, for example, it's been won by either a Black American or an African pretty much every year. But, you know, but still, like you said, though, it's only a few people. It's only like the first three or four people. And then after that, it's European athletes. So not a whole bunch of color yet.
Right. And we should note that in terms of color, that's any person of color. So it's primarily Caucasian. Right. And Asian right. is not very represented either.
Exactly.
If it's okay with you, let's go back to something you said a minute ago, which I have not personally witnessed. You said you've had some people call out names, some racist comments. And this, you know, obviously this goes on. This is a part of America. This is probably the part of the world. It's part of human culture. And yet I would, just speaking entirely personal, I would hope this wasn't part of running culture. Somehow I like right. to think that runners, part of the sport is that everyone is nice and supportive. Now, maybe I'm incorrect and I just don't know. And so your comments on this are important to me. So this is kind of hits me hard. You see what I mean? I want our sport to be like this family where it's super supportive. And so when you say you've had some untoward comments, I'm going, ouch, you know, just for you and my sense of this community.
Yeah. I mean, it catches us all off guard. I think, like you said, you don't expect it in our sport because you would think people are focused on performing themselves or just the performances in general, spectating them so that, you know, you wouldn't have hatred. Your heart wouldn't have your mind wouldn't encompass enough space to have hatred or racism in it in that moment. And so it catches you off guard for sure. Even I think the first time somebody says something racist to me in a race, I almost was kind of confused at first. Like my brain froze. And I was like, wait a minute. It took me a while to process what had just happened. Cause I was like, they didn't just say that, did they? You know, but yeah, it's surprising, man. I mean, especially this at my age, you know, I heard stories. I've talked to, you know, my great grandmother and my grandmother and about what they went through, you know, when they were younger. And you would think we are so far away from that. Like, that's 50, 60, 70 years ago. Like, there's no way we would still be dealing with these kind of things, but here we are.
Wow. Well, thanks for filling me in, Joe. And I think I can speak for everyone listening to this. My apologies for any flack you've gotten. It's just not appropriate at all for anyone anytime. So right. Thank you for letting us know. Wow. Now, ever since I've known you, you've lived in Colorado Springs.
And I think so.
Yeah. Now, Colorado Springs is not the most progressive city. I mean, it's a lovely city. It's a beautiful place. But, you know, it's in terms of Colorado, it's sort of on that end of the spectrum. But you're okay in Colorado Springs. That's worked out well for you.
Yeah. I mean, and honestly, it's been – I always value hearing the other side of the fence, right? Like, if I don't like chocolate and you do, I want to know why you like chocolate. And I want to have that conversation, or, you know, conversation comes up quite frequently. I'm a Chicago style pizza fan. My mother and my wife, they like New York style, and I'm, you know, so it balances it out. I like, you know, I'll try their style and they'll try my style. But, being here, you know, I came from Washington State, which is a very liberal place, very blue state. I went to college in probably one of the most red states in America. And then, you know, went back to Washington, and I came out here, and especially in Colorado Springs. So it's kind of cool in one aspect, and is hearing the other side of how people feel about politics, religion, just society in general. You know, I find it very intriguing to have these conversations. So it's really cool to hear that. So yeah, it's cool. You know, I think it's good to have a mix. And I feel like Colorado Springs is, there's a big mixture, a lot of, you know, liberal minded, conservative minded people in a, you know, pretty small city.
Excellent. I really very much appreciate your attitude, Joe. The mix is important because we do go to this right or wrong thing very quickly now.
Yeah,
I've been around a long time. It didn't used to be like that. But nowadays, even if you're a self-proclaimed liberal, you're going to start blaming people pretty quickly. You know, we're all a little quick on the draw. So I very much appreciate your attitude of, well, I like New York style. I mean, Chicago style. There are people like New York style, et cetera, et cetera. And just let's say, hey, we have different opinions. Now, there are some things that we want to draw the line at. Such as racism, sexism, et cetera. Right. But other than that, let's just let's hear everyone's opinion. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, it's important. I mean, you don't want to be in an echo chamber, right? Like, it feels good to be around people who think like you, who speak like you all the time. But, you know, me personally, I go against the grain in a lot of senses in life. And so I like to hear, you know, I like a disagreement here and there. I like to know, you know, why I'm wrong. I want you to tell me why I'm wrong and why you're right. And, you know, it's nice to have those conversations and work through that, but you got to be careful who you have those conversations with. Right. I think for really, really heated conversations, especially revolving around racism and issues with a society and economic issues, not a big deal, but definitely when it comes to racism, it's best that you have those conversations with people that you have a vested interest in, you know, people who maybe you have a really good relationship with, and there's some love there, because honestly, you know, I've seen those conversations go left real quick, and, you know, people get heated, and shoot, even people when they're in, you know, in talking with family, people that they love and they have a rapport with, it can get heated and things can go left real quick. So, you know, it's important that you don't just have these strangers that you just see in the streets or at coffee shops, which I've done, and they went well 9 times out of 10. And there's that one time where it's like you both are kind of heated with each other, and it's not a great conversation at the end of the day. But sometimes it's important to hear things that heat you too. You know, like, everything isn't going to be peaches and cream in life. Sometimes things don't work out. Sometimes people don't agree with you, and that's how it is.
Definitely how it is. That is a democracy. That is a community. You don't want to live in a country where everyone feels the same way. That's literally not human nature. So the only reason that would ever happen is if there's a political regime called fascism. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it is, if everyone agrees, because the only way anyone would agree is if they were forced to. So I appreciate, yeah, literally, I mean, whether it's food or anything else, while at the same time, as I said, we have to live within certain boundaries of the law that we've all agreed on for the common good. Well, excellent, Joe.
I'm okay with them forcing Chicago-style pizza on everybody, though. That works for me.
Isn't that a little greasier, or is that what your wife says?
No, they just – they think it's too much. And I'll admit, like, you know, when you have a New York-style pizza, it is – it's cleaner. It's not as much. You know, it's a very light type of pizza meal. But I think when you look at a Chicago-style dish, it's just like a masterpiece, you know.
I think it's more calories. I think as a
for sure.
Like you need that the calorie bump there.
Yeah, it'll give you everything you need. You can get all your vegetables, meat, all that in one slice.
Well, just I'm going to go back to your second answer here regarding how well you are known. Relative to how well, in my opinion, you should be known and how well you're regarded by every single runner I'm aware of. I mean, again, you're the runner's runner. It's just the casual public might not have heard your name, which, you know, I'm on a mini campaign here to correct right now. But just to stay with this little food thing for a minute, that is one of your interests, is cooking and cuisine, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So besides Chicago style pizza, I mean, do you go ethnic, international? Where do you trend on this?
Man, everything, you know. I like to play with some Szechuan dishes. I love Japanese food. I love Italian food. I mean, those would probably be my top three right there. You know, those
Szechuan.
Yeah. That's kind of, I think most Americans don't realize that they would love that type of food, just because, you know, a lot of it is sweet. You can get like the sweet and savory blends, and sometimes not the healthiest thing. But definitely, if you have an itch or you know, there's something that you are really, you know, really thirsting for, a flavor or taste, you know, that's definitely one area of food. You know, Szechuan food can definitely fix that. Or even Korean food. I've started to get into Korean food, you know, the last few years, and big fan of that too. Korean food is really good.
Well, the whole Korean culture is making a major comeback in the United States.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how this happened, but music, the whole Korean culture is going mm-hmm. strong right now. TV. But Szechuan, do you prepare this? You're buying out? Because Szechuan has a particular pepper. You know, there's a pepper used in the Szechuan style that is unique to Szechuan. And Szechuan, by the way, means five rivers in Mandarin. And so
Never knew that.
Yes. And so the origination of a lot of the major rivers in the entire Asian subcontinent is in Szechuan. So if you kind of look at a map, these giant rivers like the Yellow River, the Mekong, this is where they start from. But they have this pepper that's not hot. It's piquant. You know what I mean?
Yes,
like
I know exactly.
South of the border, we know the chiles. Of course, I like chiles too. But the Sichuan pepper is like piquant. It has this drying effect, and it's particular to that part of the world, I think.
It's seco, dry.
There you go. Pepper.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we'll have to get together on this sometime.
Hey, I grow a lot of peppers, Buzz, so I can definitely wake up your tongue for you. I got some stuff that'll definitely wake up everything in your body.
All right. I didn't know you. So you grow your own peppers.
Yeah. I like to. I'm a connoisseur, man. I love peppers from all over the world. I even try to smuggle a couple seeds from other countries. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't work out so well. But yeah, I love growing peppers, man. They're fun.
The customs doesn't take kindly to that.
No, they do not. They do not.
Mm, Wow, Joe, I still want to get back to this other running related topic here, but you've got me going on this right now. I once smuggled in some Peruvian papas, the original potato from Lake Titicaca, and I grew them out for a number of years before I moved, and then I lost the strain.
Oh, man.
I know it. I know it. Man, so
that's awesome.
Yeah, well, we better return to your answer that you gave
before TSA gets a hold of this podcast and both end up behind bars, man.
That's right. Good point. Thank you for the advice there. But I have quoted you literally on this podcast probably two or three times before. And this relates to your answer regarding social media. Mm-hmm. We were sitting at the Gonzo Inn a number of years ago during the Moab Trail Marathon. And we were talking about the same topic. And you said something to me that I never forgot. And hopefully other people won't either, since I've repeated you. I'm going to have to paraphrase. But tell me if I have this correct. I hope I do. You said there's two general ways to build a running career. One is through social media and talking about yourself a lot. And two is by winning races.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I would say that's still true.
And you did the second.
Yeah. I mean, at my age, right, social media wasn't a big part of our culture, or it wasn't even a big part of the sport really when I came in. So there's kind of that disconnect, right? And also secondly, in my household coming up, talking about yourself was very frowned upon. Talking about yourself in the community was frowned upon. You couldn't be out at the court talking about, oh man, I'm the nicest on the court. You know, you can't guard me. My three's better than all you. You can't be that guy, because then everybody is coming for you, or you might get smacked. You know, like it was a different world back then. But so I think that's why also I value, you know, the work. I'm about that work and, you know, putting in the work. And I know that's something that can never be devalued, right? If I post a picture, it can, and I'm doing something that maybe is trending right now, it can be valuable today. In 3 months' time, people might say, oh, that was whack. And, you know, like, well, you know, what do you stand for? You know, basically it can be devalued. But if I won a championship, you can never devalue that. Like, I won that race. You know, you can say what you want about that race, but I won the race, or I did well in that race. I ran this time. I was competitive. You can't devalue that. And that's something you can always be proud of, you know, at the end of your career, is that, okay, I was competitive. I did something. I accomplished something. Yeah. You know, and I look at the guys who inspired me when I was coming up. They were not talkers. They were not, hey, look at me. You saw them. They put in the work silently, and they handled business when it was time to compete. My father is one of those guys, right? A lot of people wouldn't know that my father was like such a good basketball player. My dad was really good. He just, you know, he made poor choices as a young man, and he ended up going into the military. But in my eyes, my father could have been an NBA star. It's just he made poor choices in his youth. And you don't see nobody, you know, never saw my dad bragging about himself or, you know, telling people he was this or that. He just did the work. You know, he wasn't a braggart. And, you know, nice. He was the guy that I looked up to. My dad was my hero. He was my, one of my biggest influence, not one. He was my biggest influence, in terms of athletics and learning work ethic and drive.
He just did it.
He put in the work, and, you know, he got busy when it was time. I remember even when he was older and I, you know, my youth was starting to help me surpass him, and I was taller than him, and, you know, I was faster than him. He was still competitive even in his 40s. And it was like, man, I was impressed, because I was like, you know, when I get in my 40s, I think my son's probably going to be spanking me, because he's already pretty big kid. I don't think I'll be as competitive as my dad was with me.
Well, you're 37 now, married with two kids. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. You put in the work. Your father was your biggest inspiration for that. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate what you said about social media. Like you say, you get 10,000 likes, 100,000 likes if you're a pop star. But then next week it's done. It's gone. It doesn't mean anything.
And people can unlike it. You know, you know, like it's just, I don't find any value in it. Or there's value in it. Okay. I'm not stupid. I understand it from a business perspective, but in terms of if we're comparing it to results from competition and performance, there's no comparison.
Right. No, there's not. In fact, I'll invite everyone here to look on Wikipedia, where again, your list goes on forever. In the written show notes, I'll provide links to this. Because we
could
just
have them go to my site. I have a site where I have my up to date accolades, because I don't know where Wikipedia, like who manages Wikipedia pages, but you know, a lot of times that stuff is outdated and sometimes it's probably wrong. I think, I don't even know if you have to verify the information you put on there. I know in college we weren't allowed to use Wikipedia at all. So I'd imagine it's because there's not a lot of verifiable data on there.
Good point. Yeah, Wikipedia cuts off at 2018. Well, since then, you've done a zillion things. So yes, your page will be in the written show notes for sure.
Okay.
So people could peruse 6 pages of the races you've won. Again, it's insanely, it's just incredibly impressive, Joe. But coming back to that, I like that. Social media is driving a lot now. And in the past year or two, we've seen the dark side of it. We've seen, for young people in particular, there's a look at me. But then if you're not on the upside of that, it's like, ooh, I don't count. I don't matter. Everyone else is having more fun than me. And there can be it can lead to a dark place for many young people. And we've seen it politically, too. Mm-hmm. As we hope social media would unite us by enabling us to communicate very well, but instead, to a certain degree, enables people to stick to their own tribe. And so they only hear what the algorithm is feeding them. Like you say, they don't get a chance to get other people's point of view.
Right.
So it's been, it's a mix, shall we say.
Right.
But you winning a race is clear.
Yeah.
It lasts forever. So thank you for verifying my quote. I appreciate that, Joe. Let's switch to,
I think you can do both though, too. I mean, just to add on that, like there are some athletes who are, they're kind of, you know, champions in both ways, right? They have the social media side, and they also have their performances to kind of back up that popularity.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. That's a key thing to say.
No,
inherently wrong with almost anything.
You got to pick your own path. You got to pick what works for you, what you like doing.
Right. Well, you obviously like to run. You obviously like to train. So after going through all these accolades, now I'm going to ask how. Here's a big open question, Joe. You're 37 years old. You've been winning almost everything you've entered for, a decade. How?
Man, I think that the biggest thing is just being smart, right? Like not letting my ego take over, my vision of my training and what I want to do with the season. I think, earlier in my career, there were times where your eyes were bigger than your legs could handle. And so you wanted to do workouts and do things and training that would kind of leave you hurt or overworked. And I realized, right, you have to take pride out of that plan and that process. And you really have to be willing to adapt your training, even though it may not be what you feel will get you where you've always been. You might not have as much faith in it, but coming to the line healthy is definitely better than coming to the line hurt and really fit. I've had to learn how to let pride go and really be more humble with my approach with training. And sometimes, you know, there's workouts that I can't do, and just have to let go of that idea that, oh, I need to run this, and, you know, I need to be fast, and I need to do this and this and that. It's like sometimes you have to adapt to where you are in the moment. And that's something that I've been able to do, you know, definitely at least the last decade of my career. And it's allowed me to have some success, I think, long term.
Interesting. I appreciate that. So in terms of specifics, can you shoot us some numbers? For example, do you have a miles per week that you tend to do, things of that nature?
It varies. It depends on what I'm racing and what I'm getting ready for. But, you know, I wouldn't know off the top of my head. I'm not one of those people who are like focused on the numbers like that. Like I couldn't give you an exact number.
Wow. I like that. That's telling right there, isn't it? So one could generalize and say, you know yourself, know your body, you have a lot of experience. And so you've learned to do what needs to be done, and you feel that out rather than keeping this super accurate training log. I got to do X, Y, Z on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's a good explanation.
One does notice you're not on Strava, I do not think.
No, I am. I mean, that's pretty much the only way you can verify it. Well, I guess there's other apps too. You just need a GPX file, but I'll use Strava to verify like FKTs and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. So just to wrap up that, your training tips, and I appreciate the one is being smart. Okay. And just trying to add a little touch to that as to what does being smart look like. And our listeners want to know, you've had a lot of success here. So do you do like hill intervals, or you just go run hilly routes, things like that?
I mean, I do a little bit of everything, but in terms of adapting to where you are, right? There are some people who they have a schedule and they say, oh, I'm supposed to run 10 miles today, you know, on this trail. And maybe you're not ready for that. So you can maybe just do 4 today. Some people can't let go of the idea that, oh, I put down 10 and I got to do it. I've always done 10. And they feel like, oh, I got to do it. And so they go out and maybe they hurt themselves because they're following a schedule that they're not ready for in that moment in present fitness. And so, you know, that's a pillar in my training is, you know, you have to do what you're ready for in the moment, and you have to be honest with yourself. There's a lot of people who, if you talk to them about just the sport in general, a lot of people you come across, they're not realistic. They have these goals that just don't make sense for them. And so their training definitely doesn't make sense for them. It might make sense for somebody who's like 5 minutes faster than them, but not for them. And, you know, for me, I'm my biggest critic. You know, I always say that, there's very little you could say about me or my career, that would hurt my feelings, because I probably said far worse about myself. And so, you know, there's times where I'm like, look, you're not in shape. Who are you kidding? We're not doing that. You know, let's stick to this a little bit shorter today, or let's tone down the effort. You know, let's make sure we're healthy. Let's get in shape so that we can do the work that we want to do later.
Gotcha. Well, you did 3 FKTs this year, all on 14ers in Colorado, Huron, Elbert, highest in Colorado, and Chavano. Did you do like interval training for this, like hill intervals, or did you just practice running uphill? I mean, what did it look like to get acclimated to do 14ers? Or did you just say, hey, I'm fit enough, I don't need to be acclimated in particular?
I probably should have tried to get acclimated. I wasn't as focused on altitude racing this year. I just happened to be out there training. And so, there's a little fun 14ers to go and do, or 14ers that kind of mimicked something that I wanted to do later in the season. But I think it's better to come in acclimated, especially for those kind of races, because definitely, you know, you can get altitude sick real quick playing around on 14ers. And, you know, I was born at sea level, so, you know, I'm not going to feel the greatest at 14,000 feet in general. But yeah, I was just mostly using those as tempos and preparation, just trying to get in shape. I had a long layoff this year. So, you know, I needed a lot of work, a lot of tempo work, a lot of aerobic work. And, you know, 14ers were one of the ways I did that. And I did some other mountains too that, you know, I didn't go for FKTs up there, but we're just putting in work and trying to get in shape.
Nice. Now, last year you did the Boulder Skyline Traverse because that during the pandemic year, that oddly was a qualifier for the Golden Trail Series.
Yeah.
And FKT route became an official qualifier. And so you came up to Boulder and laid down a pretty fast time on that. But that was kind of interesting because you weren't familiar with the course. So you kind of, you had a few people out there say, hey, you know, go that way.
Yeah. Maybe a couple days before that, I went, Matt Daniels showed me how to get to South Boulder Peak. And he showed me kind of like where to start was. So I knew how to get to South Boulder Peak. I did. And then I kind of, it's pretty self-explanatory how to get to the next peak because there's kind of like a ridgeline there. So I actually reached out to Sage, just cause I knew, you know, he was in town. I knew he wasn't overseas or racing at the moment. And I was like, man, can you get me to Flagstaff? Cause I really don't understand how to get there from Bear Creek. And he went partway there with me and he started slowing down and just kind of giving me directions like, hey, you're going to get here. You're going to make a left. You're going to make a right and then come back. And I was like, okay. And so, you know, and then he met me on like the other side of it. I don't know if that was called Flagstaff. There was like kind of a, you're on a ridgeline for a while and you kind of go up this one little peak, really small, and then you come back down it. And then I think you made a left or something. Anyway, he met me again and took me like another probably mile or 2 miles to, what's that last peak called?
I think it probably is Flagstaff, isn't it?
No, the last one is something else.
Oh, Sanitas.
Yes. Sanitas. Yes. He took me to the bottom of that. And so, yeah, he kind of took me through that area where you cross a street and you make a left here and a right there. So there was kind of a section after Flagstaff where definitely I wouldn't have known where how to do all of that stuff. So I was really thankful that Sage had the time to come out and join me. So it was really cool. And just to kind of link up with him, I hadn't seen Sage in a while, and he's one of those guys in the sport I've always respected. And so cool guy to kind of catch up with and chop it up with. And so, yeah, man, we had a good time out there.
Yeah. Well, you laid down a fast time, which I think still stands, probably will stand for a little while.
Yeah.
And we spoke a few years ago about FKTs because you, as an ascent, would you say, come to think of it, it occurred to me you are something of an ascent specialist. I mean, you can get it done on the round trip, but you're really hard to beat on the pure ascent, like at Mount Washington, right?
Yeah.
You've got how many times under an hour? I mean, under an hour is rarefied company. I think you've done it 3 times under 1 hour.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I've done 2 times in the 58. And I think 2 times in 59 and then 1 time over this last year with the weather was over an hour for sure.
Yeah. 4 times under 1 hour. That's a rarefied company. So would you say you're best on the uphill?
I don't know. I think it's just something I probably like uphill running more. I like to finish on a peak. I don't know. And I think uphill running is all about, fitness. You know, it's not so much about like just risk or if you're not afraid to fall, you know, it's really about fitness and I value fitness. You know, I come from the track, cross country, road world. So, fitness is kind of the whole idea, the whole point of running.
Right. Interesting. Well, staying with that for a second, because obviously you've raced internationally, you mentioned risk. It's a little different in the Alps, isn't it? I mean, here we call it trail running. There they call it mountain running. And so when they get to the top, they're going to point it down. those guys, they're going to take some risks. So have you noticed a difference between racing stateside and racing, particularly in the Alps, in terms of that downhill aggressiveness?
Not at all. I think that's media, again, being Eurocentric. America has mountain running too. We have tough races here. Their athletes are really no better than our athletes. It's just that in America, there's a lot of hybrid athletes. There's a lot of money to chase in different types of running. And so our athletes are not focused on, you know, just the super technical, steep mountain racing all the time. There's, you know, I think to make a living in the sport in the U.S., you do need to be able to compete in kind of the faster trail races and also the steep stuff as well. And whereas in Europe, you can just kind of specialize in the technical steep stuff and you'll do just fine because there's plenty of races over there for that. And there's not a lot of like the faster type stuff over there.
Good answer. That's interesting. So for example, we noticed this is an ultra race, Ultra Tour du Mont Blanc, UTMB. The American ladies have always done extremely well, while the American men, not so much. Mm-hmm. You say that's not – everyone's a good athlete, just they get a chance to focus on that style, while we tend to do a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, you look at guys like Jim. He's got the ability to do things that a lot of those guys at UTMB cannot do. And so he's able to chase other things. And so – you might miss it here and there because you're good at other things. And it's the same thing with, I think, most athletes in the U.S., right? It's such a big country. There's so much versatility here. It's a difficult place to make money and be successful as a professional trail guy here because there are trail races where it's almost cross-country-esque. And maybe you're the kind of guy who's good at, say, Mount Washington. So, you know, something cross-country-esque might not be in your wheelhouse, but you're going to still go out there and compete. And, you know, you might get scalped a lot more being in the U.S. because it's so competitive across the board. And when you talk about, you know, there doesn't have to be very much prize money on the table for a big field of guys to show up. Whereas, you know, I've gone to races in Europe where, and even if you look at some of the results in Europe, there will be, you know, some money there, but the field is not very deep at all in reality. But there'll be a lot of guys who are famous on social media maybe there. And so people get this idea that, oh, it's super competitive. But it's like, in reality, what have they done that would warrant you to say that? Have they done anything on a world stage? Or is it just that they presented things to you in a way that make them look like they're great on social media? You know, I think a lot of people, if you're not in the sport and you're not really paying attention to it, there's a lot of things that kind of get almost like a magic trick, right? Kind of get flashed before your eyes and you just fall for it. And so, and that's I think that's where the big misconception comes when people talk about, they refer to Europe as having all this real mountains and things like this in the Alps. And it's like, well, we have the same things here. It's just, you know, we don't have, maybe as the same number of races. We don't maybe have the same amount of media attention on our races here, but we got some crazy terrain here as well. And we got really good runners. I mean, you're talking about downhill. I mean, look at Max. I mean, very few guys on that course we ran in Oregon, very few guys are going to beat Max on that. I don't care where they come from in the world. There's very few guys that would beat Andy Wacker on something like that in the world. But is European media sources from the trail running world going to focus on that? Of course not. They don't care about what's going on in the U.S. We always care about what's going on over there because we go over there and they don't come over here as much.
Boom. Wow. Thanks for spelling it out. I like that, Joe. Indeed, at the U.S. ATF Mountain Running Championships in Mount Hood that you just mentioned, only one person did beat Max King. You. And I think Max passed six people on the descent. And Max is 41 years old. So he got it done on the descent, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He got busy.
Well, we are counting down the mountain running championships here. So 2 weeks ago, we had Joe DeMore, third place finisher, on this podcast. And we're recording this on October 21. But tomorrow on the 22nd, we release Max King, number two. And so we're counting down 3, 2, 1. So it's, we're getting everyone's perspective. And I appreciate you just mentioning this. I like that, Joe. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got it here. We got the mountains here, but it's just the coverage, it's the media, and it's their specialization.
Right.
Well, of course, you mentioned doing a lot of different things. Max is the epitome of that. The guy was the world 100K
right.
champion, which is run on flat pavement. And
going back, though, I didn't want you to leave the point. I don't mean to cut you off, but a lot of the problem, too, is, right, we focus on their races all the time, but they don't ever talk about what's going on over here. Like, whenever I'm in Europe, whenever I'm over there for a few weeks, I don't hear about anything over here from the media sources over there. Like, they don't care about what's going on over here. But our major sources in the U.S., like a lot of our major channels, they'll write full articles on what's going on over there. And there might not even be any Americans in the race. And it's like, we give them so much attention. We don't even focus on our country as much as we focus on theirs. And, you know, I get it. It's entertaining, right? Like, if there's a lot of media attention on a race in Europe, everyone feels the need to kind of get that clout and get the exposure on their channel. So they want to cover it, but they're doing a disservice to the culture of mountain running in our country. You make it seem like we don't have real races or we don't have real mountain runners here. And, it's sad because, you know, I think it's very misleading. You know, you look at results and, America does quite well at the classic distance.
Wow.
World championship. So,
well, America in partially in the person of Joe Gray, but other people as well, particularly in the female side.
Yeah,
that's very, very insightful, Joe. I appreciate that. Good job. What about, and speaking of which, of course, you mentioned, yeah, we have the races here. You just won Broken Arrow, the Sky Race in Lake Tahoe. Very steep, very technical. So that's a good example of what you were referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a fun race. It's a good race and technical. You know, we got the mountains here too.
Yeah, we definitely got the mountains here too. Okay. Hmm. And of course, the Bar Trail, you've done the Pikes Peak Ascent many times.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bar Trail is probably one of the best trails, mountain trails in the world. There's nothing like it in Europe. If you want to go anywhere near that elevation in Europe, you're not on any trail. No trail goes close to that elevation anywhere in Europe. You're on glaciers, you're off trail, et cetera, et cetera. So Pikes Peak via the Bar Trail is almost unique in the world.
But even still, Mexico has stuff. You know, I think we don't focus on what's going on in Mexico enough, right? Mexico has stuff very similar to Bar Trail, and you'll be running at 16,000 feet. but again, you know, their media doesn't get as much attention. Their races don't get as much attention, and there might be the language barrier, right? If you don't speak Spanish, maybe you don't know how to look for information, what's going on in the Mexican trail and mountain running world. But yeah, there's some crazy stuff down there too. There's crazy stuff in Asia also, like in Japan. I mean, you go up Fuji and, you know, you can run, was it like 12, 13,000 on, you're on a trail for most of that. Some cool stuff over there. Yeah. Yep, around the world.
Annual race at Mount Fuji.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're probably 16,000 feet in Mexico. You're probably referring to Popo.
No, Iztaccíhuatl.
Oh, that one. There's the three big volcanoes outside of
Mexico. Yeah, I did that.
Ciudad. Nice.
I did that race 1 year and I couldn't breathe, man, but it was awesome race though.
Yeah. Yeah. Popo, Itza, and Orizaba. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good call out there, Joe.
No running on Popo though.
Why not?
They won't let you. You're not supposed to go over there because it was still smoking.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't. You're not supposed to be on Popo.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there's not a blade of grass growing there. It is a volcano.
Yeah. It's pretty nerve-wracking being on Itza and looking over and seeing Popo kind of smoldering or smoking at the top. You're like, oh, man.
Right. Good call, Joe. I appreciate your experience. Yeah. I have a friend of mine won that Mount Fuji race one time. He said they gave him a trophy that he couldn't pick up It was too big. He couldn't carry it.
Those are the best ones. I don't know if the camera's on that one, right? Or that one is heavy as hell.
Okay. What's that one from?
Dolomite Man.
Oh.
Yeah. No, that's in Austria.
Oh, across the border. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, speaking of breadth and the national championships, I think we just touched on that you won the USATF Half Marathon Trail Championships in Wisconsin, Cable, Wisconsin, I think, in September. So are we going to see you at the USATF Marathon Championships in Moab in 2 weeks?
No. I'll be getting ready for an event that's to be announced, I think, pretty soon, hopefully.
Another event that we don't know about?
I don't know if I can speak on it. I could tell you off camera, but I don't want to say something and that's maybe not official yet, but I think a lot of people know about it or know that it's coming, but yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm not going to do Moab this year. Hmm. I've had bad luck there. I got lost twice there. And so it's a sour subject for me.
Oh, I didn't know that. My apologies. It's a tough course. Instead of something like, Pikes Peak, it's literally the other end of the spectrum, where Bard Trail is fairly non-technical, just has this massive vert and massive elevation, while the Moab Trail Marathon course is neither, but it's quite technical with a lot of little punchy ups and downs.
Yeah. I mean, I love the course, but I think, you get lost one time, you're like, okay, I'll go back. You get lost again, it's like, I'm probably not going back there.
Okay. All right. So that 21st national championship will have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Well, you've got me curious about this event that, pardon me, I know nothing about. So should I just stay tuned to see what you might be referring to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you probably, I would imagine you'll know, knowing you and who you are in the sport, you'll probably know before most people in the next few days, I would imagine.
Okay. Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if you know before Monday, to be honest.
Okay. All right. We'll leave it at that. I appreciate that, Joe. And I look forward to seeing you in person somewhere, sometime. So next time you're up in Boulder, let me know.
Only if you're going to make that cherry whiskey that you made last time I saw you.
Oh, you remember that.
I do, man. Okay. I like cherries and I like whiskey. So that was a very nice one.
Yeah. Well, the oak cask conditioning really helps things out a lot. If you condition it for a couple of months in an oak cask, the cocktails come out a little bit better.
Didn't know that. So I need to up my game.
Your game's pretty high right now, Joe. Thank you. Thank you so much for spending this time. It's so good to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's always good, man. It's my pleasure. Like, I've always had a lot of respect for you. I always tell people, Buzz is a guy I'm always going to have love for, because you are one of the guys who were a big part of the reason that I got sponsored with Ultimate Direction. And it was one of my longest running sponsors. It's been, it's still a product that I really love. And, you were vital to that process. So, I appreciate you for that.
Thanks very much, Joe. And we look forward to staying in touch.
Definitely.